Hi everyone, and welcome to 10 out of 10 Would I Recommend, the podcast hosted by me and my bestie Gina.
Hello.
Hi babes, how are you?
I'm good. I'm really loving it. I'm loving seeing your face. We see each other all the time now, outside of our voice notes screaming at each other. It's nice to see you.
Great to see you too.
After spending the entire first episode taking the mick out of Michael McIntyre's dishwasher, we're still here.
So I'm really, really excited about that. Do you know what? I feel like I've been watching Netflix more because of this now. Yeah. And it feels better because it feels like they are paying me to watch Netflix.
That's
been the dream for the longest time.
It is amazing to be able to say that, like, you watch Netflix, part of your job. I also get to now chat about it with my friend.
Really random. What made you subscribe to Netflix? Because I remember exactly what mine was. And when I say subscribe, I mean use the friends. But now I've got my own.
This is a
secret you're going to say on the podcast.
Yeah. Well, I have told my colleagues. I hope this is. I don't know. We'll find out later. I've been using my mom's Netflix account literally even since I got this. Like, I still use my mom's Netflix account. It technically is my account now. She values it. She just watches Korean dramas. But like, I don't. I thought I was being efficient, but it's bad. It is bad. It is.
That is really bad. I started it because of Orange is the New Black. I remember being really sick. Yep. That's literally why I joined Netflix.
Yeah.
I said, this show looks sick. Yeah. Here's this thing I don't have to pay for. And then eventually I started paying for it because such is life. No, that's what it was. I got single. I had more time.
Right.
I needed entertainment. So I was like, you know what?
That's
what did it. Let me actually watch Netflix more. A guest today, which we do most episodes, every episode we've done so far, right?
Yeah,
we're doing good. And I'm so gassed about this. I'm so excited, guys.
Me too.
Like, this I am so excited. I'm going to turn into a geek, just to warn you guys.
It's an exciting time because we have the director of The Social Dilemma. If you haven't seen The Social Dilemma on Netflix yet, I really don't know what you're doing, because I'm pretty sure everybody has been speaking about it. I've had so many people come up to me and been like, oh my god, I've deleted all my apps, I'm stressed. Like, it's all about basically social media and how we're way more addicted than we think we are. But I'm sure Jeff will sort it for me. He'll sort it out.
When you go to Google and type in climate change is, you're going to see different results depending on where you live and the particular things that Google knows about your interests.
That's not by accident. That's a design technique.
What I want people to know is that everything they're doing online is being watched, is being tracked. Every single action you take is carefully monitored and recorded.
A lot of people think Google's just a search box and Facebook's just a place to see what my friends are doing. What they don't realize is there's entire teams of engineers whose job is to use your psychology against you.
Jeff, tell us all about it. What started it? Why have you done this? You kind of ruined my life, but also made it better.
You two are just awesome. Can I just hang out with you all the time and like listen in on all of your interviews, please?
Yes, you're spectacular. Absolutely can.
Oh my goodness, I love both of you. This is awesome.
Thank you.
What was the question? I don't even remember.
He loves us so much.
What do you want to talk?
He loves us. He's so overwhelmed with joy that he's forgotten.
The question was, what brought The Social Dilemma about? What made you do it?
Oh, yeah.
And also, we tried to look for you and couldn't find you on any social media platforms. Is that on purpose?
I am actually on a bunch of them, but I haven't used them in like years. I just haven't deleted my account, so they don't really... I mean, there's like a post from 2018 maybe or something like that. So I had the fortune/ I'm looking at it so differently now, the experience of going to Stanford University, and many of my friends from college went to work at a bunch of the different tech companies coming out of college. So I had friends who went to work at Facebook, at Google, at Twitter, friends who started their own companies. I had friends where they and I were working on web design companies in the mid-2000s or tried to start our own tech companies. And then I ended up leaving that world and ended up in film. And then, you know, many, many years later, everything just sort of came back full circle. And some of my friends from college were starting to talk about a critique of the companies that they worked at. And this was 2017, and it was like completely shocking to me. I was a heavy, heavy Facebook user, heavy social media user. Google was, you know, totally the search engine that I always, that's the only search engine I knew of. And I started to hear from all these people that there is this really dark side to the technology that was being designed. And that led us down this path that blew my mind many, many a time, and tried to figure out how do we bring it all into a movie and share it with the world.
It's fascinating that you say that, because now it kind of makes sense, because the whole way through it, I was thinking, because you weren't just getting any people that worked at these companies. You were getting like the person who was there like the first week Instagram was started, like the person who created the Facebook like button, like
high.
So yeah. My question the whole way through was, how did you get these people to talk? I mean, was it hard to get them to be that honest on tape?
It was. I mean, it was. And it was particularly difficult at the beginning. So Tristan was one of our main subjects, and he was at that point becoming a vocal, outspoken advocate for reform within the tech industry. And I knew him at Stanford. We met briefly in passing. Interestingly, as a total backstory, I had a job at Stanford as an Apple campus rep. I mean, I was totally an Apple geek, selling Apple computers on campus. And there are a couple other people in the film, Jeff Seibert and Tristan. The three of us actually all had the same exact job at Stanford. Like, we loved technology, loved the computers, loved the capabilities. And we all ended up in these different arenas. But there was this like shared passion of like, what could a computer do for you? The tools, the capabilities. So I think there was always that love for technology. And we ended up going down different paths. But Tristan was, I saw him, very ironically, I saw him post his piece on Anderson Cooper, like 60 Minutes with Anderson Cooper on Facebook. And that was my first introduction to this issue, was like seeing this thing on Facebook from somebody that I knew who was a very like pro-tech enthusiast saying, wait a second, there's a big problem with what we at Google are making and what these companies are designing. And that was just like this mind-shattering, what are you talking about? Like, we, all of our friends work at these companies. We've always loved these companies. And it was this real surprise to sort of take a step back and look at this this critique that Tristan was talking about, and then many others were seeing as well. So back to your question, I mean, it was at the beginning, we got Tristan to agree. He was connecting us to some people. I was reaching out to other friends who worked in the industry, other friends who started their own companies, trying to get like background interviews off the record, anonymous interviews. And it was just like going to everybody and then saying, hey, we got these three people so far. And then, all right, now we have five people. Now look at these 10 people. We've interviewed 10 people, right? And so just building up. And so, do you have something you'd like to contribute? And just like as we started getting more and more people, I think people were starting to realize that they really wanted to take part in some cases, or in some cases, people were just very nervous to go on the record as well. It took a lot of people a long time to just be willing to go on camera.
You mentioned, there's a word I can't say that Gina mocks me for all the time. And I know what, you know what I'm trying to say. Google. So you mentioned Google. You mentioned, this is so embarrassing because I know how smart a man you are, and I'm really letting myself down here. But you mentioned Google. Don't you think it's amazing? I can't say it.
Well, you know that, just as a side note, do you know the actual origin of that word and the spelling of that word?
No, tell me, please.
So a Google is a one followed by, I believe it's 1,000,000 zeros. It's like a million or a billion. I forgot. It's actually a word that represents this huge number, but Larry and Sergey spelled it wrong. Like, they accidentally spelled it wrong. A Google is a G-O-O-G-O-L. So I'm going to pull up, I'm going to search for it right now. So like the entire search engine is based on a misconceived word.
Oh my God. Go dyslexia. Right? That is great.
Yeah. It's one followed by 100 zeros. That's what it is. It's 10 to the 100th power. Either way, it's a huge number. But
it's spelled wrong.
Yes, they spelled it wrong.
Okay, so that's why I can't say it. But you mentioned
it's better
it.
SEO that way. Yeah.
Oh my God, we're learning so much. But don't you find it really interesting? I'm really sorry for how many questions I'm going to throw your way, because I'm so intrigued by everything. But the first one was, do you remember Ask Jeeves? How did Google get Ask Jeeves the fuck out of here? How?
Yeah, how did they do that? They got Ask Jeeves gone, and Bing, and all them, man. How?
So I loved Ask Jeeves. Ask Jeeves was awesome. But Google built a better search engine. And so really what happened was, there was there was this challenge around how do you get the best information to people, right? And there were, the original search engines were very hackable. Like if you searched for a particular word, there are ways to hide or embed that word in your website. And so the original search engines just weren't as reliable. So let me just, like an example, like it, like, all right, microphone. Like if somebody wanted to sell a microphone or had a website about microphones, if you put black text in a black background and you wrote the word microphone 1,000 times on the website, nobody could see the text, but it would come up higher in the search results because the word microphone showed up more frequently. Right. So that's just an example of like, it wasn't really working super well. So what Larry and Sergey did was they tried to replicate how academia recommends articles. So how many people are referencing this website? That was how the original genesis of the idea. So just like a, you know, an academic, you know, somebody might say, oh, I'm referencing this person's paper. And if 100 people reference that one person's paper, kind of build status. That was how the Google search engine was then morphed. It was saying how many people are pointing to this thing and kind of building status in that way. And that actually was a pretty successful search engine, and that yielded good results. The problem here is when everything started slipping down this very slippery slide of the advertising business model. And just to like geek out a little bit more on Google and their origin.
Go ahead.
Okay, great, great. Just rein me in if you need to. But so Larry and Sergey, the two founders of Google, they actually wrote in their PhD thesis, like their seminal piece in college, they wrote in their paper that they did not think that a search engine should be funded through advertising because it would corrupt the incentives of the search engine. Wow. So they were like, we're not going to use advertising. Then the dot-com bust happens and they're trying to figure out a way to make money. And then they were like, you know what? Well, let's do that search thing. Maybe that'll pay the bills. And they then made a change from their previous values and they decided to embrace advertising. And this advertising just has become superhumanly powerful in the last decade, right? I think this is the thing in the last 10, 15 years. The ability, you know, when you had a shared computer in the house and your whole family used that same computer, it was one experience that everybody had. Once we got these smartphones, everybody's carrying around their own customized computer that we can track you individually. And now this whole notion of micro-targeting is just for you and you alone. And all of these companies know your device and they know who's using which device. They know who's using which device paired with which laptop as well. They can figure that out. And even if you don't go, let's say you go to a website that has a Facebook like button on it, you don't have to click like on that button. Facebook knows that you've been to that website because it's tracking that. So that's the Facebook cookies that are basically all around the internet. So they're trying to collect as much information about you as possible, right? It is freaky. The amount of data that they have on each and every one of us is crazy. And they're doing this all so that they can advertise to you. Each of you would be getting different advertisements and different recommendations and different, like, there's a Truman Show for each and every one of us.
No, my head is,
I'm stressed.
The devil's at work.
Oh, yeah.
I'm stressed.
It's all downhill from here. No, it's like, it gets worse and worse. Yeah.
Okay, so is it true that if I left the internet right now, they can still advertise to me, even though I'm not on the internet anymore? They've got so much data about my age, what I look like.
Possibly. The specifics of your question, I'd have to think about. Even if you're not, even if you don't have a Google account, they're tracking you and they're tracing you. So they have these ghost accounts, right? So they can figure out who people are, even if, we know that this person exists. They might not be on our platform right now, but we know that they exist because we can see their pattern and let's figure out how to get them to come onto the platform.
Ghost right? Accounts.
And that's what Google does. That's what Twitter does. That's what Facebook does. That's what, like, all of them have this capability. Like, this is stuff that they can do. Here, all right, let me continue to mess with your brains a little bit. The amount of data that they're collecting, right? So I've heard different numbers. Some places I've seen Facebook has 29,000 data points on you. Other places I've seen bigger numbers. So, like, try to think about 29,000 things that you know about yourself. Like, it'd be really, really hard to, right, exactly. But there's this research that came out that said if you like 300 things on Facebook, right? It'll collect, if you click like on 300 things, that the Facebook algorithm is better able to predict what you like than your significant other. Like, that's how much it is kind of creepy and kind of crazy, right? Let me throw some more, one more thought, because it's crazy. Everybody's like, oh, Facebook's listening, yeah, and the microphone is listening to what I'm saying. And then that's why I saw this ad that popped up, because I said this thing. And the reality is, some platforms that are listening, like Google Home and Amazon Echo are listening. But
yeah, course,
Facebook,
yeah,
according to good sources, reliable sources, they're not actually listening. What's actually happening is even crazier and scarier than that. They just have such a good model of you. They have reverse engineered you, and they know you so well that they know what you're likely going to be interested in or likely going to be talking about. And they can leverage the big data of their network and say, hey, look, I can predict that, you know, because Gina's talking about this thing and there are 38,000 people just like Gina, and that, you know, because Gina is talking about this, it's likely that Tali and other people like Gina might also like this other thing. So let me show this to you and then show it to her as well. And then a bunch of people are now seeing it, right? This is the epitome of a filter bubble. It's like self-reinforcing. It is like we're in one different island of thought that's different than other people.
When we all sort of started finding social media, it was harmless. And now it's sort of snowballed into this massive thing that feels like we can't come away from. Now that we have a society that, where the impact of social media has essentially taken over our lives, do you think that we can function well without it? Like, if it was completely annihilated?
Yeah, it's a great question. I do think we could. We have for a long time. And I actually think we might function better without it. And it would be a world that looks very different. And at the same time, I'm optimistic and hopeful for new technology and new social media that's actually designed around how people work, about how humanity works. Like, there's a completely different way social media could exist, right? Right now, these platforms are built around a business model that has valued growth, and it's valued the advertising revenue, and it's valued a particular approach to how the algorithms work that works really, really well for the business model. They're not asking questions like, how do I deepen somebody's friendships and relationships? How do I provide, you know, opposing points of view? How do I make somebody who actually feels better after using social media, right? Like, part of me wants to use a social media platform, yeah, and leave feeling educated, informed, refreshed, a deeper connection to my friends and family. Like, that's not what these things have been built around. So, I mean, it is, you're asking a super big and awesome question. I often make the comparison to climate change. It's like, look, many years ago, a bunch of people dug shit out of the ground and thought, look at how amazing this is. We can move people and we can fly. And only years later did we realize there are consequences. We got to understand this, and we got to see what's going on as a result of these actions. And it's going to be really, really difficult for us to shift off of fossil fuels. Like, that's been this debate for, you know, decades now. And it's really, really challenging for us to make that change. I think the same thing applies here. Like, the Twitter started off as an art project, right? None of these people expected it to grow to the scale that they did. Nobody expected to have this power. They never had oversight. There's been no regulation. Mark Zuckerberg has had one job in his entire life. Like, that basically was his job straight out of college, right? I think the other thing too, I feel empathy for them. It's like, imagine you spent 15 years of your life and you're basically your entire adult life trying to build something. And then to have people tell you that, hey, your product is destroying democracy and destroying, right? It's like, that's really hard. And I get that and I understand that. But at the same time, either they're going to dig their heads in the sand or they're going to make a change. And I think that's the optimistic hope that I have, that these platforms are going to change the business model to align with society's needs and how society functions. And that we might see Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, like, all of these things could look very, very differently that works for us.
No. Do you reckon there was a percentage of the world that's kind of like avoided social media? And would you say they're happier?
I know a lot of older people in my life that never got onto it. And now they're just like continuing to be like, I told you. Right? And it's like, so I'm hearing a bunch of that. I'm also seeing, I just find that there are a bunch of people who never got onto it, who sort of live off the grid or live in their own way and didn't fall into the pressures of social media. And their happiness has never been dependent on the approval, the daily approval of other people. And I think that's, for me, like, when I realized, as I started to wean myself off of social media and get myself off the platforms and to stop using them, I was realizing, why was I posting? What was I posting? Why
validation,
did I do,
Jeff. Right? I do it for validation and the likes.
I mean, it is. I honestly, I started to recognize that. And I mean, you know, I'm a filmmaker. I go to film festivals. There's a red carpet. I saw myself. Mm-hmm. I witnessed myself go out of my way to take a photo with a celebrity to post it. And I was realizing afterwards, like, what, that was like this completely transactional thing. I had no, like, we both just posed for this photo and then left, and there was no human connection whatsoever. And I knew in the back of my mind, this is going to get a hell of a lot of likes. You're going to love this one, right? And so I found myself doing that for this, like, status. It was all for this status symbol and not based on anything real. And the entire thing is designed around, like, this search for status and approval that isn't really grounded with any human relationships. I mean, I had, like, I don't know, 4,000 or 5,000 friends on Facebook, right? I'm putting friends in quotes because I didn't know most of them. And most of them, like the vast majority of them, in fact, I didn't even know in any real way. And so to be seeking out approval from strangers like that was just not, it's not something that I felt like I wanted or needed. And certainly not for, there's a difference between people recognizing, here's my art, here's my work, et cetera, versus, hey, I stole a photo with some random celebrity and everybody now loves that thing.
This is something that I find really hard, actually. And Talani, I'm sure you'll agree with this, is that, you know, for Talani and I in our careers, social media has played like a humongous part. It's not even just for validation. It feels you have to be present constantly because it's work, right? And like, how do you... It's always been hard to me to try and like understand how I pull away from that and still, as you said, like try and find value outside of that when so much I kind of feel of my success has been a lot like down to social media, or at least people knowing who I am through social media. And speaking of success, I have a question for you. Do you find it ironic that the very thing that the documentary, I guess, criticizes, or not even criticizes, let's say like observes and explores, has partially helped the documentary's success because people are using social media to talk about.
As soon as I finished watching it, even during watching it, I went to go tweet about it. I was like, oh my God, social dilemma is mine. I was like, oh shit, I'm tweeting it about it on Twitter and I shouldn't be doing that. Yeah. But Jeff wouldn't want this for me. I'm better than this, Jeff. I'm sorry.
It's hilarious.
What's your opinion on that, Jeff?
I tend to lean into the irony. Well, first of all, I've stopped using social media myself, so I haven't been pushing it out on those platforms. And, you know, I was thinking about this one day. It's like, you don't have to talk about the harms of smoking with people who don't smoke. Like, it's the smokers that need to know about the harms of smoking. So it's like taking it to where people are using it. And I mean, I've been blown away by some of the TikTok videos of people like freaking out about the movie and yet just making a TikTok video and like asking for more likes in the TikTok video. Well, it's just like, in some cases, do you get what we're saying here? But I think part of it is like, how do we think critically about these things? And the reality is that these platforms have become a public square for society. And this is a conversation we need to have as a society about how do we want our technology to factor in our lives? And what are we willing to let our technology do to us or not? And so in many ways, the conversation does sort of need to happen there. We have created social media accounts for the film that are really focused on being educational resources. And so that's one of the main goals. We're wanting just to share and promote different voices, different ideas, getting these ideas out there so that people can hear about it and see it and think about it and hopefully question their own usage in their own life. I've had a lot of people tell me this was my last post. Like, they're posting about the movie as their sign-off post. And like, goodbye social media, watch this movie.
If you had to choose, which would you say was like the least bad platform?
Text messaging.
Oh God. Is it all that bad? Is it seriously?
Jeff, give us something. Jeff, give us something. Okay, so, I'm begging you, man.
Each of them has reverse engineered a different vulnerability for us, right? So Instagram is the photographic realm. YouTube is the video realm. Twitter is like the really short form snarky realm that is like decontextualizing everything. Facebook is sort of this blend and the age demographic is shifting. But Facebook is the one where misinformation and conspiracy theory is going crazy, as is YouTube. Right now, TikTok has just become like this pure attention thing. We're now seeing misinformation going there as well. It's hard to, I don't know what to say, which is the worst. I think that I would put like Facebook, YouTube, then Twitter in like the worst category. It depends on what we're talking about too, because like if you're talking about democracy and misinformation and conspiracy theory, those are the ones that are breaking down a shared sense of truth. But then you've got like Instagram and Snapchat that are affecting teen girls and mental health and body image. And like, that's a completely different part of the equation. Being driven by the same business model, being driven by the same types of algorithms, we're just seeing them show up in different ways through different platforms. So, like, and going back to what we were saying earlier, like, I'm a really pro technologist. I love technology. Zoom is awesome. I can see you. We're talking. We paid for this too, right? Somebody paid for this account to be able to talk for an extended period, right? Same thing with like FaceTime. Like FaceTime, if you bought an iPhone and you have FaceTime, like these are positive, powerful uses of technology where we can see each other, we can have deep conversation, like we can have space for nuance, right? But those platforms that we're not paying for, in large part, are the ones where we're seeing most of these problems. It's a bit of a simplified framework, but I think it is the easiest way to think about it. If you're not paying for the product, you are the product.
How does it feel for you to kind of see how much this docudrama has kind of like actively changed people's lifestyles and how they maneuver? Because like everyone I've spoken to that's watched it has been like, I can't actually believe. The bit that got me was, you know, the text messages when it was like, let's give them three dots so they've got something to look forward to. And I was like, oh my God. Oh my God.
Yes. And why don't they put the picture when someone's tagged you in a photo? Why put it in the notification? Right. You have to go
like
into
that,
the app.
When they figured out that hack,
blew my mind.
Of like, wait, we're just fishing, right? We're like throwing. So I, did I tell you about the resurrection algorithms?
So
a bunch of these platforms have a thing that they call the resurrection algorithm. So if you're a heavy user and you stop using, they literally think of you as dead to them, and they have to bring you back from the dead back to their platform. So they start trying to fish to get you to come back. So when I started to stop, when I stopped using these platforms in the making of the movie, I started getting emails that were like, same thing, like so-and-so tagged you in a photo, so-and-so did this thing, and they're just testing a bunch of stuff. That didn't work. They switched to text messages. So I started getting text messages coming in, and it was like, this family member did this thing, and this person that you work with did this other thing, and 3,000 friends did whatever. And then there was like this girl that I had a crush on in high school, and it was like, so-and-so posted a new photo. And I'm like, how dare you? Like, it felt so invasive. Wow. It felt so manipulative. And I was just like, I mean, I could pull up this history of text messages coming in every day, multiple times a day, just fishing to get me to come back. And feeling how manipulative it was while we were working on the movie, it's like, this is not trying to improve my friendships with these people. It's just trying to get me to come back, because once they get me back, I can keep scrolling.
There you go, keep scrolling. Okay, so Gina and I went through a whole, like, Twitter was a devil. We don't trust it. So we thought we did the right thing, but we deleted the apps off our phones.
Yeah, yeah.
However,
yes, we did.
We do still go on the .com quite often.
Yeah, we do be using Twitter. Where
are we just doing the same shit, or are we doing anything better?
I mean, it really depends on how. So there are a bunch of different aspects of this conversation, right? Like in terms of your own mental health and your own mental clarity, I think it's good to not have them on your phone. You don't want to have the availability all the time, right? Yeah. The number of times when I was really heavily using, when I would be driving my car in a red light and I've got 15 seconds, let me go check.
I've done that, I'll be honest.
So I definitely recommend like get them off your phone. That's a great starting point. I have these plugins on my computer that are called the Newsfeed Eradicator. So it applies to Facebook and Twitter. So if I go to Facebook.com, literally nothing shows up. There's like no feed. There's like a spiritual quote that they put there or something like that. And you still have the messages on the top if you needed to, or if you needed to find a particular event. You have like the sidebars, but there's nothing to scroll through. Same thing for Twitter. So that's kind of how I look at it. It's like I don't want to ever do anything where I see an advertisement. I don't want to be part of their financial model. I don't want to be helping them make more money. And my mini protest there is to never engage with the feed. And so there's nothing to draw me in. But if a friend of mine from high school sends me a message via Facebook, because that's the only way I know, the only info I have for them, I can still have that message. Then usually I just like switch it over to Signal or something else and like have the conversation elsewhere.
Okay, so I hear you. I really do. But all of this year, how does this work for social media managers, like people that get paid for this, and influencers? Because I'm not opposed to a hashtag ad.
I fully recognize that there are a lot of people whose livelihoods depend on social media now, right? So if your livelihood depends on it, by all means, like that's an important thing and necessary for your financial stability. And like, we're not asking that person to delete their accounts. But I think the real question is like, do you really need them or not? And to pose those questions to yourself. It's really challenging as we've created out this entire industry and infrastructure around attention, that the entire internet is this free thing that's optimizing for attention. So taking a step back from the social media companies, this is the entire internet structure. So all websites that have ad banners and trying to like, this is why we have clickbaity headlines. This is why like the whole desire to get people to come to a site for eyeballs has morphed the way we value all of this. By the way, this is the same thing that has morphed a lot of news. Certainly in the United States, our news networks are advertising based. And so in the US, like you have this incentive to bring more and more people into your news platform so that more and more advertisers want to come because you have bigger eyeballs. Right? That's not how, my understanding at least, is not how the BBC works in terms of like this is government funded and it's not... Right. But the quality of journalism, I think, is probably better than what we're doing with MSNBC and Fox. And I don't know what you guys are hearing every day over there. But there are big questions around we've built all of our news institutions are valuing the number of eyeballs as a primary metric. They're not valuing how trustworthy are we as an organization? How do people think about our coverage? Are they right? There are different values we could be embedding into these platforms, but they're harder to count and measure, which is why we tend not to do them. We lean into things like the number of clicks, the number of times somebody watched something. No, well, there's a guy, Tim Berners-Lee, who was one of the he's considered one of the inventors of the internet. And he is trying to build a different version of the internet right now, like a complete ground up rewrite. But this is like we've got this huge infrastructure. How do you flip the whole internet into something else? Like that's extremely challenging. But there are people who are asking that question and trying to pose a question around like, what could that look like?
When we talk about social media and like being a user, it really, like, I even find the word user so much more chilling now, because like, you know, in the documentary you talk about like it being reminiscent of the slot machines, like it being addictive, and all, there are just loads of different facts that are scattered around the documentary that are incredibly shocking. And I just want to know, if you seem incredibly clued up, so maybe there isn't an answer to this, but like of all of the things that you learned and uncovered, what was the thing that made you think like, oh my God, like really hit home how like far it has gone?
Industrial capitalism figured out how to turn nature into a raw resource for extraction. Right. So like the fossil fuel industry just like turned planet Earth into something that we can mine and make money off of. These tech platforms, these surveillance capitalists, figured out how to turn human nature into a raw resource for extraction. That our lives, our human experiences, those are the things that these companies are mining and extracting from us, all to build a better model about us so that they can sell us more shit. And they don't like to think of themselves that way, but that's the business model that they're operating. Like, their goal is to collect as much information about you and reverse engineer you as best as possible so they can better predict you, so that they can better put an ad in front of you that's quote unquote relevant to you. Like, I heard this concept and I was like, fuck, this is game over humanity. Like, we're living in the Matrix. Like, we are literally the people in the pods in the Matrix being extracted for this business model that is turning. Look, we don't pay for these things, right? You haven't paid for Twitter or Facebook or any of these things, yet they're worth hundreds of billions of dollars. It's the richest industry in the history of money. How are they making so much frickin' money? They have figured out how to turn us and our lives into their revenue. Our time is their money, and they're really, really good at extracting it from us. Like, that framework just scared the hell out of me. Like it was, we are in this era where we are living in the Matrix and we don't even realize
it. Makes complete sense. Wow. So when you're trying to relax and not think about all these things, what do you watch? Because this is a lot.
Yeah, let's take a break.
How do you chill out, Jeff?
I live in Colorado right now, so I'm glad that my family is from New York. I was born and raised in New York, and I live in Colorado, and I've avoided being based in New York or LA. And really how I chill out mostly is going out into nature and getting outside. I mean, like, through this window, there are trees and there's all sorts of wilderness. And that for me has been a place of connection and solace and just like grounding. I've been watching a bunch of the Academy. So films that are in consideration for the Academy Awards for the documentaries. So I've been trying to watch a bunch of documentaries.
Nice.
But I mean, honestly, the documentary community, we're all masochists. We all are looking for, like, what's the big issue that everybody needs to be aware of. So that's equally depressing sometimes is that world.
No, we appreciate you guys, will we? Thank you.
Yeah, no, I love the doc community. The doc filmmaker community is so passionate. They're so eager to make a change, to show the world what's happening, and to do it in more and more creative and beautiful and powerful ways. Yeah.
So, speaking of documentaries, I was watching one the other day on Netflix. It's quite dark. Have you seen it? The American Murder, The Family Next Door.
I haven't seen that one yet. Yeah.
And because documentaries are getting made in a new way, because with that one, it's just her Facebook videos and her texts. That's what the whole documentary is, and like police cameras. Wow. So do you know normally you get the bit where you get the, like, where someone's talking to camera and being like, but you don't get any of that. So this feels a lot more real because you're just seeing what she posts on Facebook and her text messages. It's really freaky.
That's interesting. Man, I have to watch it. Okay.
Yeah, it's really interesting how it's made.
Should we have a little pause to listen to the trailer?
My name's Nicole, and I'm calling because I'm concerned about a friend of mine. I dropped her off at her house at 2 in the morning last night, and I haven't been able to get a hold of her this morning. I've gone to her house, and her car's there. She won't answer phone calls. She won't answer text messages. What's her name? Shanann Wass.
Hey, guys. My name is Shanann. I just want you to know a little bit of my story. I went through one of the darkest times of my life, and then I met Chris. And he's the best thing that has ever happened to me.
So, how you doing?
How's it going?
There was no note or anything?
No. I don't know what to do right now.
The fact that this woman, the person who is featured in this documentary, is no longer with us, and we're still able to make this concrete picture of her just through her social media presence and her messages alone, I think it's
fascinating. I would add it's a picture of the projection, right? It's not actually her. Yeah. It's like what we want to put out into the world. I mean, the difference between what we are trying to put out into the world versus who we actually are. I think there's a big gap there. And so I don't know. I'm curious to see that film and how they, you know, were they pairing that with interviews with the family and the people who were close to her and could reflect on.
So her texts was more a true reflection of her fears and what she was scared of and what was happening. Whereas her Facebook was like, look at my beautiful family. Oh my God, I love my husband so much. And it was a lot dark, like, but her reality was a lot darker than what she was putting on Facebook, of course, because no one's going to put my husband's not touching me in bed on Facebook. It feels a bit different.
What else are you guys watching?
So I started watching Schitt's
Creek.
Give me
more of a list.
This will help you relax. This is not like, it's very chilled out. You don't want to think of anything. Mm-hmm. You just, oh my God, Jeff is getting a pen out.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You're so kind, Jeff.
I want to know what you guys are watching, Jeff. Yeah.
So yeah, Schitt's Creek is really good. What else have I been watching? I'm actually looking at my Netflix now.
I do have a recommendation, and it is coming out. It will come out today if all goes to plan. And it's called, the 40-year-old version. I guess it's a play on Virgin, but
I've
Virgin.
Heard of it.
Have either of you heard of this or seen the trailer around or anything? It's really interesting.
So I was part of this awesome group of people at Sundance a couple of years ago talking about projects that they wanted to make. And the director was there, and I was just so stoked to see that fully come to life from like years ago. So I've been sort of like listening in on the updates and hearing how the project's been going. But super, super excited for that team, and I'm itching. Okay, if it's coming out soon, I'll definitely take a look at it.
Definitely take a look. It's coming out soon. Just to give you a quick overview. The premise, I'm going to do my best. You know, T, I'm not the best at this. I'm going to do my best now, all right? I'm going to do it quickly. You see how she's not encouraging me, though, Jeff? You've seen it.
I'm rooting for you. I'm completely rooting for you. Yeah.
It is about a playwright who, in her 30s, was on like the 30 under 30 list, was like lauded for being an incredible playwright, and has just turned 40 and has lost that success. And so, in a bid to try and reclaim her fame, decides to become a rapper.
Any more thought on what kind of play we want to write? Remember, if you put in nothing, it'll be nothing.
Like your career?
Remember this face? She was one of Spotlight Magazine's 30 Under 30 playwrights to watch. We watched, but where'd she go?
How are you?
Good.
Archie tells me you're teaching.
How's somebody who ain't had no real hit gonna tell me how to write a play? She ain't no Tyler Perry.
I did win a 30 Under 30 award. Yes, it was quite a couple of years ago.
What do I gotta do? Write a slave musical, an all-white play?
This some bullshit.
Yeah, so she's in it, but it's not a real life story. But it's really, really good. It's like I would say give it a try.
Amazing.
Give it a try.
I actually love that we get to see things that are in like Sundance. So I feel like Sundance feels like this other world that if you watch telly, you don't really get to experience all this fun documentaries, and it feels like an elite world. And then them coming on Netflix feels really like, oh, thank
it
you.
Does.
That we get to kind of experience this sort of art as well, which is really nice.
Yeah. It is cool. I mean, Sundance has become in many ways like this marketplace for independent films, right? So people bring their films to Sundance and premiere them, and then Netflix is there and Amazon's there and Apple's there, and people are like, oh, let me, it's basically like a shopping spree for a bunch of those companies to find the films that they like. And but fortunately, that's where a lot of these films can find a great home and a distributor and get seen. Because Sundance is, and this is one of the things I've always loved about it, it is this like this representation of independent cinema.
Yeah.
Right, so our film, we premiered at Sundance. We did not have money from any big company. Netflix didn't pay to make the movie. We made the movie independently. I raised the money independently, and we wanted to say what we wanted to say without any company or team trying to like oversee it. And so that felt really, really good for us as we were exploring these ideas and these issues. And then Netflix did pick it up out of Sundance. And it's been an amazing home for the film, and people are just seeing it all around the world.
Your integrity, 10 out of 10 would recommend. You are brilliant. Thank you.
Yay.
10 out of 10 would recommend another chat with you.
Thank you both.
You
this was
the best,
phenomenal.
Jeff,
that was
honestly.
Amazing. So Social Dilemma is on Netflix now. If you haven't seen it, please watch it. And then come back and listen to this again after seeing it, because I think it will like unearth so much more after you see it.
And share on social media, despite what Jeff says.
Talk about us on social media and tweet us.
Talk about it in real life. Talk about it with your friends. Talk about it with your family. Talk about it with your COVID pod.
You might be the second smartest man I know, second only to Akala. So this has been amazing to meet you. Thank you.
Oh my goodness, awesome. Thank you both so much. This was fantastic.
Let's wrap up and see where people can find us. So if you want to find the podcast, please, first and foremost, where you can like, review, share, speak about us in real life. But you can find Netflix at Netflix UK on Twitter and Instagram, at Netflix on TikTok. I'm so sorry to do this, Jeff, don't look. It doesn't feel right after Jeff said all that stuff. It's really embarrassing. I feel really gross, but I'm still going to continue because, you know, no! I still need to get paid. And if you want to find me on social media, just don't ignore Tolly's cries. It's at Smile Gina, G-E-N-A, on all platforms. And you can find Tolly at Tolly_T.
No, you cannot find me anywhere. No way.